Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
And this is Dr. Anthony Fauci on Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press.
The vaccines do quite well against Delta, particularly in protecting you from severe disease. But if you give the virus a chance to continue to change, you're leading to a vulnerability that we might get a worse variant. And then that will impact not only the unvaccinated, that will impact the vaccinated, because that variant could evade the protection of the vaccines.
So as we just heard before the break, the Boston Teachers Union is now calling for mandated vaccines for teachers and staff in all of Boston public schools. And on top of that, because of the high rate of spread here in the Commonwealth, the CDC is now suggesting every county in Massachusetts, except Hampshire County, should be masking indoors. It's August 2021, and I can't even believe we're asking this, but are we seeing a fourth wave here? And how many more waves are we potentially looking at? To help us answer those questions and as many of yours as possible, let's jump right into another edition of Ask the Doctors. Here with us, Dr. Davidson Hamer, infectious diseases physician at Boston Medical Center and a professor of infectious diseases and medicine at Boston University School of Medicine. Dr. Hamer, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much.
And also with us is Dr. Shira Daron, infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. Dr. Daron, welcome back to you as well.
Great to be back.
So you both heard Dr. Fauci at the top there. We've been talking about the Delta variant for weeks, but it does feel like we're learning a little bit more each week about how the virus changes and mutates. What do we know better now? What do we understand about some of those changes at this point? Dr. Hamer, I'll start with you.
Okay, thank you. We've been learning a lot very quickly about the Delta virus, although I think there's a lot more to be learned. One important thing is that it appears to it's causing more infections, or at least more severe infections, in people that have not been vaccinated at all. There are breakthrough infections. The risk with people who have been vaccinated, the risk for that is much lower than someone who's unvaccinated. But one of the worrisome things is in those breakthrough infections, the viral load appears, the concentration of virus that people are shedding appears to be pretty much as high as somebody who's uninfected or who has been unvaccinated. And that means that a vaccinated person, if they become infected, appears to be capable of transmitting the virus. We don't know how long they can transmit it. It may not be as long as somebody who's never been vaccinated. The good news is that the people who are getting vaccine breakthrough infections, by and large, are not developing severe disease requiring hospitalization. And that's in distinct contrast to the population that's never been vaccinated. Some parts of the country are seeing a lot of younger adults being hospitalized, and even children in some cases, because of infection with the Delta virus. But those are predominantly in people that have not been vaccinated.
1-800-423-8255 is the number if you've got questions about coronavirus. Dr. Daron, let me turn to you. We heard Dr. Fauci there talking about the importance of limiting the spread so that the virus does not mutate more than it already has, if possible. I'm wondering, Dr. Hamer just talked about breakthrough cases and the viral load. Do we know anything about whether the virus is more likely to mutate in someone who's unvaccinated versus someone who's vaccinated?
Well, it appears that the virus is more likely to mutate in someone where the virus hangs around for a long time. There are theories that immunocompromised people who can't clear the virus might be sort of a breeding ground for mutations. But the other thing that we think is that where the virus is really raging out of control, where it's replicating a lot because there are a lot of infections and a lot of susceptible hosts, that's where variants emerge, which is sort of what we saw with the Delta variant emerging in India, we believe. And so it's just so critical that we really put our time and energy and resources into figuring out how we vaccinate the world. I think there's a lot of discussion about booster shots and third doses for Americans. And I don't think that is what will lead to you know, the best results in terms of safety for us. I think we're better off thinking about how to stop the spread, the out of control spread in the parts of the world that haven't even seen their first dose yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair point. I think there's also plenty of places in our country that are still dealing with this as well. I'm thinking about schools, students heading back in the fall, many too young to be even possibly vaccinated at this point. I don't know if you guys caught any of our conversation in the previous segment talking about the Boston Teachers Union pushing for mandated vaccines for faculty and staff. Is that something you guys are thinking at all about, and would it be something that you think would be smart public policy?
Well, I'll start, I guess, with a response. I think that, I mean, I like the idea. I think many organizations, many universities in particular, but also some businesses have gone to a vaccine mandate for all employees, or in the case of universities, for students as well as faculty and staff. And that's one strategy. The problem is in schools is children under the age of 12, because we only have one vaccine license down for use in 12 and older. There are studies going on with both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine with younger children, but it's going to take some time to complete those studies, and I don't anticipate they will be. I suspect that they'll be proven to be safe and effective in that population, but it's going to take many months before we get to the point of having a vaccine available for those younger children. And so schools need to be really up in their game in terms of indoor mask use and other measures, testing of students, as well as vaccination of staff in order to try and reduce any potential spread within the school, but also out to the community from the school.
Yeah,
and I'll just add, on the topic of vaccine mandates, even in the spring, I was sort of a fan of the idea of mandating vaccination in places where vulnerable people have no choice but to be. So hospitals, nursing homes, and schools really fall into that category where people, must be, but can't control their distance from people who may or may not be vaccinated. But, as cases were plummeting in the spring, I wasn't so much a fan of the idea of mandating vaccination in other settings. Now that cases are rising again, now that we've seen that our degree of vaccination has not been sufficient to prevent another rise in cases, rise in hospitalizations, and in many parts of our country, surges and overwhelmed hospitals, and we have really largely hit a wall in terms of vaccination, I feel that having employers mandate vaccination is really the only way that we're going to increase that proportion and save lives.
All right. I got a lot more questions to get to, but I want to make sure we get to some listener questions as well. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Abhishek is in Cambridge. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi. So my question is about colleges and universities coming back. And since we know that Greater Boston area has a lot of colleges and universities, and they're different from K-12, that where students are going to be living in close proximity with each other. And there isn't much guidance focused on higher education from either the state or the CDC. A lot of the guidance is focused on K-12. So does the Delta variant change anything? Should college universities that are, most of them are bringing back all their students, should they focus on distancing and other public health mechanisms in the wake of the new variant?
Abhishek, it's a great question. I'm wondering, are you at a college, either as a student or working? Is this something that is a personal
yes.
question for you?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm sure you're having some concerns as you're looking at the beginning of a new semester. Dr. Durone, Dr. Hamer, which one of you wants to jump in on that?
Why don't I take this, because I've been working with both Boston University, but I gave a talk last week to the Association of Independent Colleges and Universities in Massachusetts. This is, Abhishek, this is really an important question, and I think everybody's pretty nervous because of Delta. Many universities, not all, but many across the state have made a vaccine mandate initially for students, and then many have made it for faculty and staff as well, with the exception of either medical or religious exemptions. But those tend to be very small proportion of the overall population. So that's one measure. I think most have BU, for example, has planned even before Delta became a menace to have indoor mask mandates. So all classrooms will be, they'll be fully densified again. So there's going to be, you know, students within, you know, 6 feet of each other in classrooms, but they're going to have, you know, requirements for mask use and some degree of monitoring of that in all public places, indoors. You know, I think the one tricky area are cafeterias, and different solutions are being considered for that. The other aspect, because we believe that a lot of transmission is through aerosol, is trying to optimize HVAC systems. So there's better, you know, fresh air being instilled into the systems, but also high-quality filters being used, as well as portable HEPA filters as a solution to try and limit potential aerosol spread. In addition to that, most universities are going to be testing systematically, both asymptomatic and, of course, symptomatic faculty, students, and staff. And that will be done even for people who have been vaccinated because of the potential, you know, although smaller risk of breakthrough, smaller than people who have not been vaccinated, that is. So there are a number of strategies. I think they're going to be intensified, and we'll you know, I think all these measures should serve to keep things under control in the months to come.
We're talking with Dr. Davidson Hamer and Dr. Shira Daron. I want to go right back to the phones here. Christine in Acton has a question. Christine, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, how are you?
We're doing
Thank
well.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Go right ahead.
Hi. So my coworker has a six-year-old son who recently tested positive for COVID, and they were told that they're vaccinated themselves, but obviously the six-year-old isn't. But they were told that they didn't have to quarantine because they're vaccinated. And I guess the question is, you know, they're re-exposing themselves day after day after day to a positive case. So it's different than, say, having a close contact outside of the house with someone you don't live with. Why is the guidance the same for those different situations?
It's a great question. Dr. Daron, you want to take that one?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, the guidance from the CDC was that vaccinated individuals did not need to quarantine after an exposure, even after a household exposure. Now, we do know that household exposures are the highest risk. And some vaccinated individuals, even prior to Delta variant, were contracting infection. Now, at the time, we were seeing consistently, relatively consistently, that on average, people who developed infection in spite of vaccination had lower viral loads. And more recently, we heard, based on a couple of studies, but specifically the evaluation of the Provincetown outbreak, that it seems that some of the vaccinated people had higher viral loads, and that is consistent with what I'm seeing in the hospital. So the CDC made a recommendation that vaccinated people who are exposed don't need to quarantine, but should wear a mask and be tested at 3 to 5 days. The Department of Public Health of Massachusetts, last I checked, had not updated its guidelines to add that requirement. And, you know, I think that there are good arguments in either direction. Vaccines are still highly protective. And I think that, you know, I'm noticing that there's a confusion about that. You know, the CDC director made a statement that vaccinated people can now transmit infection to the same extent as unvaccinated people. And that is only if they get infected. The vaccine is still highly protective against getting infected in the first place, which is an important point. And the Delta variant really, so far, the data show that it reduces that effectiveness against asymptomatic mild, moderate infection by a few percentage points. No, that, of course, that's one of the areas that we need to keep watching because there are some conflicting data on that. So if your coworker is wearing a mask, if your coworker is carefully monitoring her own symptoms, she is still within the state guidelines. And allowed to go about her business without quarantine.
Yeah, important distinction there between exposure and infection. It really kind of speaks to the importance of getting the messaging right kind of across the board. I want to stick there with the Delta variant and kids under 12 because I've seen some things that are suggesting that the Delta variant is actually sending more kids to the hospital. We're seeing more severe cases. Are you guys seeing, what's the latest you're seeing on that?
Well, so I'm here in the hospital. We're just seeing a really slight uptick overall in our numbers of hospitalized COVID patients. So we tend to be kind of late in seeing those changes, even after sometimes other hospitals in the state do. We have a few pediatric patients. My overall impression on the situation in terms of the children who have unfortunately become infected is not that the virus has a predilection for children where it used to spare children. We have had this conversation in previous surges. Any population that's proportionally statistically protected from infection, whether that's children or vaccinated people, when the numbers rise, the numbers of those smaller proportions of protected individuals will rise. So it is still the case that children are relatively protected and vaccinated people are relatively protected, but you will see more of them getting sick and getting hospitalized and unfortunately dying when there are more infections.
Yeah. 1-800-423-8255 is the number. I ask that because I think what a lot of parents especially are wrestling with right now is this idea of, obviously, on the one hand, you want to keep your kids safe in any situation whenever possible. On the other hand, if you're looking at another year of isolation or any kind of, you know, whether you would try to go with a homeschool option or try to do something other than send your kid back to a full in-person schooling, I think a lot of parents are starting to think about the long-term effects that kind of isolation is having on their kids as well. How would you two talk to parents who are kind of weighing these things and trying to figure out the best in a really tough situation?
I'll respond first. I think it's a difficult question. I think that there have been a lot of students that have really lost out on part of their education in the last year and a half. It wasn't easy, for certain populations. They just don't have, good internet access or home laptops or other means to access remote learning. And even when they do, it may be very easy to be distracted when you're trying to learn from home if there are, other activities going on there or other things you could be doing. So it's quite easy to sort of be physically present, but sort of signed out. And so I think the advantages of in-person education are so substantial, and in particular after this gap, which many have had, that we need to balance the benefits, the educational benefits, and really I would say psychosocial benefits, the children, with the risk of potential exposure to SARS-CoV-2 in the school system. And I think that the measures such as mandatory vaccination for teachers and so forth that are being pushed, as well as indoor mask use, attention to hand hygiene, and then some schools districts are also using surveillance testing. All these should help to reduce the risk and make it safer to have a child in school. So I think it's a risk benefit analysis in a way for a parent, but I think that the benefits of in-person education are substantial.
Dr. Jerome, anything you would add to that?
Yeah, I have these conversations a lot, and I just would add that everyone's risk tolerance is different, but it is important for people to have an appropriate understanding of what the risk is. And sometimes when we hear about, cases are rising and cases are surging, we forget that we are in Massachusetts and cases aren't anywhere near what they were in the winter, for example, when we had successful in-person education. And obviously we may not have all of the same mitigation measures in place, but I've seen some really good analyses recently that suggest that children are probably at similar risk to vaccinated adults. Children are probably at similar risk to what they, the risk that they face during a bad flu season when we do send them to school. So I think it does help to frame that risk that way.
All right, great. I think we've got time for one more call here. Let's go to Bobby in Mattapan. Bobby, welcome to Radio Boston. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to express a real urgency in bringing vitamin C and the efficacy of vitamin C back into the discussion. when you're talking about boosting the immune system and fighting off COVID and other influenzas and stuff. My community uses vitamin C in large amounts, up to 11,000 milligrams every 2 hours when someone comes down with COVID or any kind of influenza, and they have fought it off in a number
right.
of Let, days.
Let's throw that question to the docs. Bobby, what do you guys think? Vitamin C, does that offer any protection? And are there any other immunity-boosting tips you would give to folks?
I'll take a crack at that because I do work on micronutrients. I think that, you know, vitamin C is important for sort of many normal bodily functions. It's less integral to immune function, and there are really no solid data that I've seen that vitamin C helps improve the immune response to COVID-19. I think there's no harm in doing it. It's a water-soluble vitamin. It's excreted pretty quickly. It doesn't accumulate. There have been studies looking at vitamin D and vitamin D status. You know, if you're deficient in vitamin D, that is important because it's important for normal immune function. And it's not clear that it supplementing with vitamin D improves outcomes from the disease. But again, I think having adequate vitamin D status is important. Zinc is another micronutrient for which there's a lot of interest because zinc is also involved in normal immune function, and people may become zinc deficient if they don't have a good diet. But again, you know, studies of that, there's some that are ongoing, and so far, you know, I'd say there's no solid evidence that zinc supplements improve outcomes. But certainly, you know, having a good, healthy diet and adequate amounts of these different micronutrients is very important for normal health as well as immune health.
That's all really great info. I do want to point out also there's a great post up on the WBUR.org homepage, tips to keep your kids safe from the Delta variant specifically. I want to ask you both before we go about booster shots. We're hearing kind of this increasing rumble that maybe folks will need booster shots. What are you hearing? Do you expect that? And why would that be an important tool?
Well, first, I do want to say that when it comes to giving immunocompromised people third shots, I don't like to call that one a booster shot. You know, for me, that's really the question of whether a three-shot series would be beneficial to someone with a profoundly suppressed immune system. And I think that's a separate question, which might have a different answer and a quicker solution here. When it comes to kind of the rest of us and the possibility that our immunity from vaccination is waning, of course, I'm very interested because I got my first shot the moment vaccine arrived in Massachusetts. I have not seen any convincing evidence to say that we need them yet or that we'll need them soon. That decision should not be based on antibody levels. That decision should be based on whether we're seeing severe disease in people who were vaccinated however many months ago.
All right. Incredibly useful information, as always. That's Dr. Shira Dorone, infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center, and Dr. Davidson Hamer, infectious diseases physician at Boston Medical Center and a professor of infectious diseases and medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine. Dr. Hamer, Dr. Dorone, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you. Take care.